I grew up in a lot of poverty, so in that instance, it meant moving around a lot. We kind of grew up in and around Flint, but my grandparents owned a little restaurant in Flint, Michigan, and so that we were always, at least that was kind of like home. So I was excited to move away and be on my own, but I went to Michigan State University, and I was used to working and going to high school at the same time, and I was trying to do that and go to college at the same time. I'll, you know, be honest, I wanted to quit my undergrad a few times, just trying to balance it all. And I'm glad I didn't. I wish I would have had a better way to balance it. And, you know, later I read all these papers about how poverty impacts education. And I saw this presentation on someone presenting about bat research. And I was like, wait a second, you have careers studying bats?
Vanessa Rojas is here, and I'm very grateful, Vanessa, that you're here and that you've taken time to let us get to know you a little bit better. And I know it is a bigger time commitment for you because you had to travel to get here to the main campus in Syracuse. So let's just start with, Vanessa, what's your role here at ESF?
So I am an assistant professor, and I teach at our Wanakina campus, the Rangers School, and I teach the wildlife courses up there, and I teach GIS.
And I had the opportunity to see you earlier this year because you, for the first time, and perhaps only, and we're joking offline because it is not part of your day job, but you were very generous to step up and be the director of the Cranberry Lake Biological Station this past summer.
Yeah, and it was a great opportunity. It was hard to kind of balance all that work with the work at the Wanakina campus, but it was really nice to get to meet other faculty and students from main campus. So it was a way for me to connect with the folks here as well.
That didn't even really occur to me that's an extra opportunity for you to connect here to Syracuse. So how about your path here? You are one of our newer faculty members, and I'm curious, where was home for you? Where do you think about when I ask you where you're from?
So I'm actually from Flint, Michigan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Where we've heard about in the not too distant past. How's the water in Flint, Michigan these days?
Yeah, you know, I don't think anyone trusts what they're saying, but, you know, it's difficult. I have friends and family around that area still. So.
Drinking water from sources other than their kitchen sink?
Yeah, no one trusts them.
That is really terrible. Yeah. I just saw something recently. There's another municipality in Michigan that is going through something similar with lead.
Oh, I actually missed that.
Yeah, I know. And there's a lot of infrastructure problems across this country.
Yeah.
So what was your childhood like? Did you spend all of your time in one house, in one place in Flint, Michigan?
The opposite of that.
Actually. Okay.
We moved a lot. I actually have a little bit different background, I guess, than most people. I grew up in a lot of poverty. So in that instance, it meant moving around a lot. We kind of grew up in and around Flint, but my grandparents owned a little restaurant in Flint, Michigan. And so that we were always, at least that was kind of like home, like the restaurant was. Mm-hmm.
A home base.
Yeah.
And what kind of restaurant was that your grandparents were running?
It was a Middle Eastern restaurant.
That's got to be an interesting thing. I don't picture a lot of Middle Eastern culture in Flint, Michigan, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, so they were the first Middle Eastern restaurant. So my grandma's Palestinian, but my grandpa's Chilean. So it was like this odd mix where they tried to have a Chilean restaurant, but no one knew what that meant.
They see chilies.
Yeah, they thought it meant like spicy food, which is not the case.
And right.
So it was failing, and they changed it into a Middle Eastern restaurant because my grandma had the experience of cooking that food. And so they were the first Middle Eastern restaurant, but just outside of Detroit, and Dearborn has like one of the largest Middle Eastern populations outside of the Middle East.
So, interesting. I didn't realize that. And how far away is Dearborn
it's
from?
About an hour.
From Flint, so not too far.
Yeah.
It's some of my favorite food. Have you learned how to cook it all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have.
So you grew up kind of moving around, and I think that's interesting that you described it as having grown up in poverty. So how does a young girl from Flint, Michigan, with this Middle Eastern home base in this restaurant, go on to become a GIS ecology, wildlife ecology faculty member at a STEM college like ESF?
Yeah, it was, I guess, anything but the typical route. College wasn't something that my family talked about me doing. I was first generation going to college. And everyone was content with me just staying and taking over the restaurant. And it was definitely, they tried to convince me to do that and I turned it down, or at least stay and go to school locally and help run the restaurant. But for me, education was like an escape out of poverty and to change my pathway.
It's really that embodiment of what we tell people the American dream is all about, is you can come from anywhere and be anything. And it's just a matter of what you put in. So were you a pretty good student when you were in school?
I was definitely that huge nerd. You know, I was told there was no college fund for me. And so if I wanted to go to college, I would need to get grants and scholarships. And the only way I really knew how to do that was to get really good grades. And so I was a huge nerd and got really good grades.
I think if you try to look for some common threads throughout the conversations that I've had with faculty, that there is a preponderance of people here that describe themselves as nerds.
Yeah.
And as my husband said, nerds rule the world. So yeah, we're very lucky here at ESF. So you got good grades, and then we kind of smooth over the details because we take them for granted. But as a first-generation college student, how do you even know about taking the SATs and filling out your FAFSA and how to apply for college? Did you have somebody in your life that helped?
A little bit. It was actually kind of a huge mess and I had no idea what I was doing, to be honest. And that's like one of the things I like about teaching now. And I've even met with senior students that like my friends work with and like other like youth programs to talk to them about that kind of stuff, because it is so difficult to navigate. And especially if you go to, no offense to my former high school, it's like a crappy high school without a lot of opportunity. There was a little bit of information there. In Michigan, it's the ACTs. So I was told to take those early so I could start taking. I took classes at Flint Community College. My high school had to pay for it.
Because, oh, so you put some credits in the bank.
Yeah. So I was able to do that and go to like night school there while I was in high school still. And so that was helpful, but I didn't really know how to like choose a program, how to pick things. I knew I had to do FAFSA and that was what allowed me to be able to go to college. But a lot of the other stuff was difficult to navigate. I had a friend who, she came from more privilege and she helped me a bit too. She went with her family to visit the different colleges and I didn't even know that was a thing you could do for like orientation. And so she filled me in and I kind of just followed along with her.
Oh, that is a good friend.
Yeah.
That is, and she probably is aware of the role she played in your life.
Yeah, I don't know. We lost touch, but I did look her up and she's a doctor now. She's a urologist.
Okay, so she also did a good job, yeah, right, with her education. So you put some credits in the bank. You're a high school senior graduating with some start on college through your local community college. What was the next step?
So I was excited to move away and be on my own, but I went to Michigan State University, which is a huge university. And I was used to working and going to high school at the same time. And I was trying to do that and go to college at the same time. And it was honestly a huge mess. And I see some students coming in and doing that same mess. And I wish I would have had a better way to balance it. And, you know, later I read all these papers about how poverty impacts education. And so when I went for my master's, I was like, I can't be stressed about work and trying to learn at the same time.
You know, that perspective that you bring is so valuable to the whole college, and I would imagine life-changing for some of our students, because you can relate to that balance and that pressure. I know myself that I was a waitress when I was in college at Cosmo's Pizza, for people around here that are familiar with what Marshall Street used to be like. And I remember those days. I mean, I would work until 2 o'clock in the morning. We stayed open and sold slices of pizza to people on their way home from the bars.
Yeah.
And then, you know, trying to get up for an 8 or 8:30 class in the morning. It was tough.
Yeah, it was tough. And I thought that was normal. I thought that's what everyone was doing. I worked at Tower Records and they stayed open till like midnight. And then I worked at the university post office, so I could work before my 8 a.m. class too. And so I remember going into exam and talking to someone next to me and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I haven't had any time to study. And she's like, what do you mean? Like, and she was like, oh, I don't work. And I was like, you don't work? Like, what do you mean you don't work? Like, it just didn't occur to me that people didn't have to work. Like, the parents or family or whoever was helping them.
And what a leg up.
Yeah.
So it says even more about you that you did this in large part on your own. Yeah. But Tower Record, I didn't think you were old enough to say something like Tower Record.
Yeah, they closed while I was in college. Okay. So I lost that job.
That was a really fun place, Tower Record. I remember traveling as a young person and always looking for the Tower Record store, you know. Yeah. That had to be an interesting place to work.
Yeah, it was fun. I always loved music and it was a fun break from school, although it was stressful balancing all of that.
Especially, you know, you're a first generation college student, and you know, you are a female, and you're a minority, and that isn't what at that time especially was typical for what you saw in STEM classes at the college level. I mean, that's really extra impressive.
Yeah.
How did you get into the STEM field?
I've always had love for, I guess, science, but like as a young child, it was animals. You know, I just really was fascinated by animals. And then when you're really young, you don't realize all the options you can do with that. So I was like, I want to grow up and be a vet. You know,
I knew you were going to say that.
Like, that's so classic for little kids.
That's what Stacey McNulty said when I had the opportunity to talk to her. I thought I wanted to be a vet. It's so true, though. I'm interested in animals. Ask any young person who's interested in animals what they want to be when they grow up. A vet, because they don't know there's a million other options, right?
You don't know. And then somewhere in middle school, I was fascinated by like how the human body works. And that's like still an interest of mine. I got to teach anatomy at some point too. So I guess like all these aspects of science, I was really intrigued by.
And I would describe myself as a good science student when I was younger. And I was definitely interested in science. But if you were like me, no one was really saying, you know, go teach GIS, go become a wildlife ecologist.
Yeah, definitely not. My undergrad's in environmental science, and while I was at MSU, I took my first GIS course, and I almost switched to getting a GIS degree, and instead I just took a bunch of GIS courses then. By the time I finished, I hadn't really done wildlife stuff. So I didn't really know how to pick that major. And I see a lot of our students be like, I don't know what to do. Which one should I pick? And it still gave me the foundation to then go into more wildlife specific.
When you started college, did you think I maybe want to be a teacher?
I don't think I did. No, it wasn't. From what I can remember, it wasn't something. I did do a little bit of tutoring while I was there with younger, like, K-12. And that was really fun for me. And maybe that like sparked something in me. So I did that for work as well and teaching like math and reading.
Do you have faculty from your undergrad days that you think back that helped mentor you?
Yeah. Dr. Paul Nickel from my undergrad. I was really struggling towards the end to finish and just getting kind of frustrated balancing everything. And I remember the first day of class with him, he wrote question authority on the board. And I was just like, yeah.
this is going to go well. That's great. That's great.
And it kind of re-sparked my wanting to learn and
That's
education.
Fantastic.
And it's that junior year where you start to get to take the classes you really, really like and switch. So we kept in touch for a while after another friend I was going to school with. We tried to meet up with him for lunch periodically, and I've lost touch. And he's an older gentleman, so I'm not sure where he's at right now. But
and I would imagine he's somewhere in your brain when you're teaching and trying to inspire students. And I don't know how we can do a better job of letting students know how broad their choices are. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not just this one path you have to take or this one route. And it's okay if you don't fully know where you want to go. And
absolutely. I feel so bad for students. They're 18 years old and we're going from, you know, get your hat, get your coat, get in the car, you know, like I'm taking you to school and dropping you off at the front door to, okay, what do you want to do for the rest of your life?
Yeah.
How are they supposed to make that leap, you know, from high school to, okay, the rest of my life? And I just don't know how I want ESF to play a role, certainly locally and in exposing careers to young people. I think we'll have a lot more interest, but it's just this kind of big unknown.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you, you know, take a class or find something that like kind of like sparks in you and you want to know more about that, and you know, you, it's fun to learn about that thing, and it's not like this huge task. Like maybe that's where your passion is, right?
And I think the experience you had working and especially tutoring, I mean, who knows how you will feel about trying to teach people until you actually do it. That would be advice that I would have for young people is just do everything. Try it.
Yeah.
This is the time. This is the safe time. I mean, you're not going to have the flexibility to change careers as often as you can jump around in different experiences when you're here at college.
I think that's super important. I took a couple years break between each of my degrees, and that changed my path a little bit.
So you graduated and then what?
So I moved back to Flint, and I know Flint has this bad rap, but I loved it. It was such a, it's such a great community. We used to be a larger city, and a lot of people left when the jobs left. And so it left this core group of people that really loved
passionate,
the city or couldn't get out as well. But I moved back and had a good friend group there, and some point in between there, I saw this presentation on someone presenting about bat research. And I was like, wait a second. People have careers studying bats? And I kind of just rerouted.
That is interesting. So when you made your way back to Flint, is the restaurant still a going
concern? No. After like my first year of college, my grandparents retired.
And oh, so
they sold the restaurant.
Yeah. Oh, no. They were holding out for you to take over.
Yeah.
I hope somebody's picked up the baton and is making some baba ganoush and hummus in Flint, Michigan.
Oh, there's some really good restaurants there sure that I always go to when I'm back. Yeah.
I'm kind of curious, as somebody who loves Flint, what was the reaction for people in Flint when Michael Moore came to town and decided to make a movie about your city?
I think that a lot of people that actually live in Flint, maybe Michael Moore was trying to, I don't know, let people know what was going on. But I think for Flint, it gave us a really bad, like the people there, a bad rap. Like everyone's like, oh, you skin rabbits in your backyard, which is, you know, that's fine. Some people have that life. But it really gave Flint this bad rap and made people not want to go there, which I don't know if that was his initial intention.
Yeah, so maybe the unintended consequence wasn't great for the residents of Flint.
No, it really wasn't. I don't know if I'm the only Flint person that thinks that way, but I'm not like a huge fan because it was so negative. And there are negative things about Flint, but it didn't really focus a lot on the community aspect there.
Yeah, it didn't really do a service to the city of Flint. I totally can see that. Yeah. And then you had a little bit of a 1-2 punch because you have that reputation and then you have this water situation and the whole world, you know, focused on Flint for not positive reasons once again.
Yeah. I actually, when I moved back to Flint, I got an AmeriCorps job through the Michigan State University Extension on water quality of all things, but it was before the water crisis too. So I did that for a year.
Interesting. Well. So how did you make the leap I'm imagining that you came again with no college fund.
Yeah.
How did you maneuver the move into a master's program?
So I read a lot about, like I was saying, poverty and education, and it's not the best role, but because my grades ended up not being that great for my undergrad because I had a lot of family stuff going on and other life stuff.
Working.
And so I ended up having to take out loans and really hoping that public service loan forgiveness keeps going now. But I did that and I was able to pay my rent for the whole semester, not be stressed about paying rent. And I lived pretty cheap. It's actually really cheap to live in Flint, surprise. And I didn't have to be so stressed. Living in Flint was a lot cheaper. So I went to University of Michigan Flint for my master's. So I got to stay right there and it was a lot more affordable than being in a bigger college town.
And we have a lot in common because I stayed at home with my parents when I was in grad school also. Okay. And I know that savings and that, and it's a luxury to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I had my own, I had roommates. I didn't live with my mom, but I had to help her out a lot as well.
And what is your master's in?
My master's is in biology with a focus. You could either choose like wildlife or kind of more like the genetics route. So I took wildlife.
And is your interest in bats at that point something that you got to further expound on?
Yes. So that's when I got to start actually researching bats. And then I also worked for a nonprofit part-time and we did like bat education and they had bats that are the kind of the leftovers from zoos that they didn't want. And so we did education programs for like K through 12 and other groups with that.
And brought them bats?
Yeah.
And I bet you took away some of the fear of bats when you get to see them up close. They're kind of cute.
They're super cute. that was a huge, we had the big fruit bats too that look like more like dogs. So that helps to ease people in. And then you show them the little ones that we have around here and they start to think they're cute. And we had to deal with people that were just absolutely terrified of them. But by the end, you could turn them.
And have you had experience going in the caves that have thousands of bats?
I don't do a lot of cave work. I do more like forestry bat work. Mm-hmm. But I had the experience to go in this cave that a colleague of mine found, and it had this endangered Virginia big-eared bat in there. And I had to like crawl in there and go in, and there was like mom and her little pup. And it was really cool. I got to pick up some temperature sensors they had in there and count like 400 and some bats flying out of it.
How cool. Yeah. When you stop and think about, you know, you just told me about being a student and living in Flint, and then fast forward, you're crawling into a cave yeah. of bats and getting monitoring equipment. So then you took time off again after you earned your master's?
Yeah, after my master's, right near the end of my master's, I met this person who ended up becoming my PhD advisor, which I met her at a conference. And so it was a little terrifying, but I was like, I'm going to find people at this conference that do bat research. I'm just going to go up and talk to them. So I was finishing my master's and I went up to this woman, Joy O'Keefe, and I said, oh, hey, you're here with doing bat stuff as well as the Midwestern Fish and Wildlife Conference. And she's like, oh yeah, you're doing bats. I'm like, oh, pretty new. I have a poster here on my research. Maybe you want to check it out. And then later she did and said, hey, I'm hiring. She was doing her postdoc at the time. And she's like, I'm hiring a field technician. And it looks like you have some of the experience I'm looking for. Here's my email. Please send me your resume.
Huh. Was she also in the area or did you have to move away?
No, I moved away. Yeah. So she was down in the Southeast, like Tennessee, North Carolina area. And it was my first like pretty intense field season. And I worked down there for, I believe it was 3 months, 2 or 3 months. And it was in the Smoky Mountains and in and around the Smoky Mountains tracking endangered species of bat.
And where was she that she became your major professor?
So she was doing her postdoc then, and then she got an offer at Indiana State University to become a professor. And she asked me to be her first PhD student, but I wanted more work experience before just jumping right into a PhD. And I ended up working for her for 2 seasons. Like, so I worked the following year for like a 10-month project with her as well.
And still loved it?
Yeah, still loved it. And then I took a little time off, traveled to South America. I just wanted to do all this stuff before going back.
What an interesting life. Oh my goodness. And you know, it's because you made it all happen.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to find a person doing bat work and I'm going to approach them. I mean, that takes a lot.
It's stepping out of your comfort zone for sure.
Yeah.
But I've always been a really determined person and you know, I have to pep myself up sometimes, but I'm pretty determined.
It sounds like it. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have a brother. Yeah.
Is he older?
He's 2 years older.
And does he have that same independent, I'm going to advocate for myself and do what I want?
We're pretty different.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. So this is maybe a personality you came cooked with.
Yeah. And I don't know where it came. Maybe a little bit from my grandma. She was a very strong woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you just traveled in South America or were you working?
Yeah. I mostly just traveled. My grandma had passed and my grandfather went down to Santiago. So he and my grandparents and my dad moved to the U.S. when my dad was 11. And so my grandpa went back down there to spend some time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had never been there at the same time. We could never afford where we could all go. And so I'd saved up money working this field job for 10 months and not having to pay rent because it's all included. And
nice.
I went down there and got to meet, I have like a lot of family down there. So I got to spend like a couple of months down in South America.
That's terrific. Yeah. How about the other side of the family? Were you along the way ever able to spend time in Palestine?
No, but actually a good amount of my family that's in Santiago is Palestinian. So a lot of Palestinian people, when they left, they went to Latin America. And so originally I have some family in Honduras and I have some in Santiago as well. So when I went there, it was really getting to know all the Palestinian side of my family as well. And some of them do like political science work over there.
Interesting. And is that where your parents met?
No, my parents met in Flint, actually. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That is an interesting story too,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes I talk to people and I think you should write a book, but you strike me as somebody who should just write a whole bunch of bullets.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can grow up in poverty,
yeah.
and you can, you know, get to college, do this thing and follow your passion and advocate for yourself and kind of make it happen.
Yeah.
And work hard would be on your list of tips for people, I'm sure.
Yeah. And I think too, I think there needs to be more support for students that are coming from that as well. Cause it was hard. And I wanted to, you know, be honest, I wanted to quit my undergrad a few times, just trying to balance it all. And I'm glad I didn't.
You know, Vanessa, that's something that you can help me with. If we're trying to diversify our student population, as I'm sure a lot of colleges are, and it's a particularly heavy lift in the STEM world. There haven't been, in some underfunded school districts, you know, there's not the labs, there's not the opportunity to do the field experience, there's not the whetting your appetite for this kind of work. But I would love for you to say, as president of the college, what could I have done to help Vanessa as a young person get here? And we can put some of those supports in place here at ESF to help students.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they're doing some of that. I know I just signed up to help be a mentor for some students too that are in the STEM program. I think they
Terrific.
Just got a pretty big grant to help with some of that. And I think for professors, realizing that not everyone came from like a good school, and it's okay if the students don't know how to use a microscope yet. And, you know, not everyone had a microscope they could learn, or they heard there was one crappy one that everyone got to take turns on. So you got to use it for like a minute, you know.
I'm so happy to have you say that, because there is a tendency toward this kind of elite. If you can't hack it, then, you know, maybe you don't fit here. But actually, there's a lot of potential in people that just haven't had the opportunity.
Yeah.
And if we can help them be exposed and teach them how to do things like use a microscope, I would imagine that a lot of superstars are turned away for the most basic of things.
Yeah, I totally agree. Because I think the students get this belief from people around them that they don't belong in science, that they don't belong here. It's going to be hard to get them to stick around.
Yeah, I think those are very wise words. But my door is open and I read my email. And if there are things that you experience along the way that you think I could be doing to make things better, I hope that you'll shoot me a note and let me know.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that you're willing to talk about this and not pretend it doesn't exist, I think is a really great part, a start.
I appreciate that. So before we wrap up, I'm kind of interested to hear, what's it like to live up in the Adirondacks? After all of these different experiences that you've had, you're living in a pretty remote community now.
Yeah. Should I tell you that I just took yesterday off and went on a 13-mile hike?
Really?
So I don't like hiking on the weekends, so it's usually busier, so I'll work on the weekends, and then I took yesterday off to go hike another high peak.
What did you hike?
I did hike Dix Mountain.
Wow.
It's like a 13-mile trek.
Are you headed for a 46er?
I think eventually. I'm not like a super competitive person, but eventually I just kind of want to see them and do different stuff.
You know, I'll tell you, earlier this year, I'm just getting to the age where I'm starting to feel like, oh wait, I'm getting older. Like it never occurred to me before until recently. And my son is climbing the high peaks. And so I was thinking, well, I'll just do one or two a year. And then I started to do the math. I was like, oh, no, no. I have to do more than one or two a year if I'm going to get all these in. But I haven't climbed a high peak, but I've climbed Blue Mountain. I've climbed Owl's Head.
Yeah.
I absolutely love being out there. If you catch me in that last part where I'm trying to scramble over boulders,
yeah,
I might not be telling you how much I love it, but when I get up to the top and I see the vista, and sometimes with the fire towers up there, it's just a spectacular place to be.
I totally agree. Yeah, I love being able to walk out my door and go for a hike and be able to live out in the woods. You know, I love city life too, but I like being able to live there and then go visit cities, eat good food, and then go back to the woods.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been struck a few times in this conversation by how much we have in common, but I would say the same thing. Like, I love visiting other cities, but I just love living where I do, you know, and it's a really good feeling to just be so content. I feel like I have everything I need. My family is here. I'm very happy. But if you pick me up and bring me to, you know, New York City or Chicago or Miami, I'll have a wonderful vacation, but I'll be very happy to come back here.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, yeah, growing up in the cities, we, my friends and I always had this like escape. We'd go up for the weekend and go up north, as it's called in Michigan, and spend all weekend up there and just take any minute we could to get out of the city for a bit. And I think that influenced me wanting to live up here.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I'm very glad that you're here. We're lucky that you're here, and I appreciate you taking time so that, as I said, we could learn a little bit more about you. I enjoyed spending the day with you at Cranberry Lake, but sitting down and kind of hearing your path here has been very valuable to me, and I'm sure it will be to others. I'm sure it's inspiring faculty to say, you know, maybe I need to spend an extra minute with this student who's a first-generation college student who doesn't know the things that we just all take for granted.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me here as well. And I really love being a part of the CSF community and like getting to have opportunities to come down to main campus and meet folks here and run into some of my students that came down from the Ranger School as well.
Nice. Well, enjoy your afternoon here and I'll see you again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks.